There's the music, and we are back underway. Episode 98. I remember some, what would it be now? 40 years ago, Notch. I like Brian Lawton. He's a friend of the show. I guess they put a little bit too much pressure on him and called him Notch, and he wore 98, a step below Gretzky. It didn't turn out that way, Craig. It didn't turn out that way for the first overall pick in 83.
No, when you think about you're drafting players that have been the best at their level, you know, coming out of Europe, high school hockey, junior hockey, college hockey, or whatnot. And, you know, and one of the things, and I say this all the time, Steve, you know, in just about every other profession, like think about law school. Okay, you have a daughter that's in law school, okay? So she's going through law school, she's getting educated. Obviously, she's very talented, very gifted, very intelligent. She's going to go to a law firm, and she's going to article, you know, and she's going to get some experience. So the law firm is now going to be able to test her, right? They're going to give her some files, and she's going to be able to, they're going to be able to say, hey, look, you can handle this. They go, oh, geez, you know, this is pretty good. We need to hire her. So they'll make her an offer, right? And then they hire her. In every professional sport, hockey, baseball, basketball, and football, you're looking at all these talented people. You never get to test them at the level that you're trying to project them to, ever. There's the odd occasion where you see, you know, like during the lockout of 2012, 2013, I got to watch Alexander Barkov go head-to-head versus Mikko Koivu in Finland. So it was, give you a little sample size. But can you imagine a law firm just saying, oh, well, they look like they have talent, and we're just going to hire them without even testing them? They would never do that. But in sports, and yet everybody wants to rip the scouts and rip the teams and everything, and they all know better. And the people do the most criticizing are the ones that have never done it. They've never, ever had to go and do it. So, you know, Brian Lawton was a terrific player coming out of Mount St. Charles Academy in Rhode Island. You know, and he's not the only one. I watched Alexander Daigle. I'll tell you a quick story. Alexander Daigle, he was phenomenal. He was a heck of a player. I was with John Ferguson Sr., who at that time was with the Ottawa Senators working. We were at a game. I forget where we were at. It was a Quebec League game. And, you know, we had gone together. We're sitting there and we're watching the game. And Daigle had about, I don't know, 4 or 5 points. Somebody had slashed him and they were going after him and everything. Well, late in the game, they were up like 7-4 or something. Daigle just ran this guy that was all over him all night long. And Fergie Sr. looked at me and he goes, oh boy. He goes, he not only has the skill, he's got that fire burning deep inside of him. The Ottawa Senators drafted him first overall. I can tell you this. I watched Alexander Daigle play. I never thought that he wasn't going to make it and make it big. And you know what? There's lots of factors that come into play. Next level, expectations. Remember, he signed that big contract with the huge signing bonus, you know, and, you know, Pierre Lacroix was his agent. And I'm going to talk about Pierre Lacroix just quickly after I get through this story. And, you know, he was on a bad Ottawa Senators team. You know, Alexander Daigle, you know, he so-called bust, you know, these players were the best at their level. And let me just say this. Pierre Lacroix was a great agent. Pierre Lacroix was a great GM. Pierre Lacroix belongs in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
I'm with you on that. He's so good to us over the years as well. Always had time. And he was multi-talented, as you mentioned, in the different routes that he took. And the anniversary of a pretty big trade is coming up. I guess we'll save that for next week because I think we're going to land on the anniversary and I played my last game. Be careful when you jeer your own players, folks. Sometimes it provides a curse that doesn't go away. I liken it to someone who swims in their bathtub. Then they swim in their backyard pool. And then they go to the ocean for the first time. Different waves, different sand, different elements. Some deal with it well and some don't. But you can't say 98 without thinking of 90. I do. Every time I think, and I don't know why Victor Mete is wearing 98, I wouldn't let him, but you say, worry about other things in life. Okay, I got something else to worry about. Coach's challenge. It feels, right, I'm talking in the crease, that this year there's a stricter standard that they didn't tell us about. Now, is that just anecdotal? Does Zach Hyman have a case from Wednesday night? We've had some battles kind of in and out of the crease that have been disallowed. It feels now, the simple equation is this. Did anything you did as the attacking player affect the goalie's ability to move freely in the crease? And if the answer is yes, pushing Seth Jones in, then it's no goal. It just feels they're making it like law. They're making it as, well, as black and white as it's possible. Do you feel that way, Craig? I do.
Yeah, you know what I do? And here's how I feel, though. I like it, though. I like it a lot. I think it's really important. And remember, you're trying to adjust. The goaltenders want more of a clear standard of what goaltender interference is. They want to know, okay, listen, Zach Hyman, forget about the goal being disallowed. He's lucky he didn't get a 2-minute penalty for interference or cross-checking, right? That was clear-cut goaltender interference. Luke Richardson knew it. Everybody knew it, right? So, but I do like that. You know, we go back some games. You know, you think about the New Jersey-Toronto game when Nathan Bastian gets his skate on Matt Murray. You've impeded them. I don't care. You know, it's like soft calls. Oh, it's soft. You know what? Let's give a 1-minute penalty for the soft tripping call, right? And we'll give 3 minutes for the hard slashing call. Like, give me a break. It's 2 minutes. It's not soft. You know what? If you impede the goaltender's ability to move, and I think that hockey ops and everybody working together is really understanding, and the players, you know, you can't do it. Blake Wheeler. In the game against Colorado, bottom line, you impeded his thing. Like, doesn't matter. Like, can't do it. Not going to happen. I think the standard is becoming clear, which I think is great.
I'm so glad you brought up Blake Wheeler, because that was the one before that people said, well, hang on. Well, was there an action by the attacking player that didn't allow the goalie to move freely in his crease? And that is actually not just rule book. I think it's actually more clear than it's ever been before. And don't say, well, last year or in another game. We're talking about in the moment and trying to be as consistent as possible, knowing that we'll never have consistency. Craig, you're not making every single call when they go to the video booth to look at goalie interference. And even if that is the case, and you've got your files and your computer, there might be one moment where this shade of Baskin-Robbins vanilla is different from that shade. No two plays are ever exactly the same. I think what I've noticed, and you talked about, Wheeler took a path of his own less resistance, which was between the goal. He went in the middle of the sandwich. And then there was, you know, a problem. Had he gone the other way, it's different. And if he goes in the middle and there's contact, and then there's enough time for the goalie to reset, and he does the Gary Roberts. And Gary was great at it. He actually, I'm out here. And Gary was good at avoiding, and I thought he did the tightrope better than anyone. People should go watch what he did. He actually was very good at it. I think these other guys go in, and you know what they say? Whatever happens, happens. Okay, well, whatever happens, happens means we're going to review it, and then it's no goal. What they do want is they want to win a 51-49 call. That's what they're trying to do. And guess what? Right now, I think the last 5, 6, 7, 8 of these, they're precedent setting. I think coaches, managers, and players should look at this and go, I see what they're doing right now. I think it's actually never been better. And you know what people say when we say that? We're wacko. We don't know what we're talking about. Just like that offside call at Montreal, your buddy Dave Poulin, you know what he said? I can't believe it. I wanted to call Dave and say, I can't believe that you can't believe that it's inconclusive. Like, to me, I can't tell. Well, what was the call on the ice? It was onside goal. Okay. It's inconclusive. He says, I can't believe it. Does he have a Zapruder film of something else that we're not seeing? So I can't believe when I watch games, sometimes what I'm hearing. And I'm not singling out Dave. I just thought, I'm not sure if that puck's in or not. They can't decide later. We're not sure. We're going to guess. No, the goal was a goal. Craig, you can't reverse anything unless you've got, you know, proof. I don't think there was. You tell me if I'm wrong on that. I didn't see any proof.
Well, you just used the word conclusive evidence, right? And if something is inconclusive, and you know what? There's times when you think about goal reviews, right? And we think, oh, was that in? And we can say, geez, you know, that was really close. But if the call on the ice is no goal and they can't conclusively say that it was a goal, well, then the call on the ice lives. Right. And there's always going to be different opinions. You just read part of the rule on goaltender interference impeding the goaltender. That's the other thing that I find. Like, you know, the NHL has this fantastic rule book that's written out. It's very clear. It's accessible to everybody. They have a video rule book that gives you examples. Right. And what amazes me is how many people don't go and just look at what the rule is. Last week in Dallas, Winnipeg was playing Dallas. There was a controversial play where Dallas tied up the game late. And the mask is off. Okay, yeah, we know the mask was off on Connor Hellebuck, but let's look through the rule. Like, number one, was there an immediate or impending scoring chance? Did your team have possession of the puck? Blah, blah, blah. Who initiated the contact? Like, and one of the things I said, was this, who caused the whole problem? Josh Morrissey caused the whole problem. So, that comes into play. So should the Dallas Stars pay a price now for having a goal, a scoring chance taken away from them in the last minute because of the actions of another team? No. I think to your point about precedent, that also lets players know, I better be careful here. I better be careful here because even though I'm doing this, I'm not going to be let off the hook. Players are so smart. Steve, I remember being in a manager's meeting and it was a discussion about the offside and the tag up offside rule. And then they were talking about icing. And the whole idea was, how are we going to speed up the game? Continuous play, right? So the object, well, let's not call icing on an attempted pass. Well, sounds like a great idea, right? Well, the players that can make it look the best on an attempted pass are the most skilled players. Chris Pronger can miss your stick by 3 inches to make sure he gets out of trouble on an attempted pass, right? And so I think that what ends up happening, right, is that you got to be careful of the concept because the players they're brilliant. They're smart. They know how to take advantage. We talk about the goaltender interference. We talk about that play with Josh Morrissey and Connor Hellebuck. The standard gets a little bit clearer, a lot more clear. And I love that. I think that is wonderful. But I can only say this, read the rule book, watch the video rule book. It's there. Immediate or impending doesn't say, it's 2 passes or it's 4 seconds. Impending, read the definition of impending. There it was. The right call was made in that game. I know Winnipeg Jets fans don't like it. Bottom line is we're getting, I think, to a better, yep, that's goaltender interference, to your point. That's a good thing.
Yeah, and it goes back to, you've been in the meetings. I have, I think, brilliantly written and performed 2-minute video essays on different things that have happened. And I clearly remember it's in the 2000s, either right before or after the lockout, Keith Tkachuk knocks his own net off accidentally, as he knocks it off, the other team, let's just say San Jose, Joe Thornton, scores the goal. Well, the rule was written that if the net is accidentally knocked off by the defending team as a puck enters the net or a team has a scoring chance, it's no goal. And I remember just me and a lot of other people getting on their high horse and saying, That's got to change. I think we got to change accidentally to accidentally or on purpose, right? 63.6, 63.7. And the managers get together like you, and you might have said, I'm going to talk to Ken Holland, blah, blah, blah. And you change the rule. And now no defending team can benefit by any actions which knocks their own net off. And then people say, well, let's use logic. Give them a penalty. Give them a penalty. That goal would tie the game 3-3 with 8 seconds left. A penalty's not going to do it. We'll give them a penalty shot. Why would I give him a penalty shot when they already scored the goal? And then you get into arguments with people. People say, I don't like the rule where if you hit the crossbar, faceoff stays inside. Why? You're punishing a guy for hitting a crossbar? Yep. No, the league changed that year. Everyone should grab the NHL rule book, Hockey Canada, USA. I know people in Hockey Canada that have not changed any of the rules. And you know who's following suit? The IIHF. Who used to think they were holier than now. And we're good. No, they're basically saying, Stephen Walken, give me your rule book. Give me your rule book. And right now, the rule book's never been better. The calls have never been better. Craig, goalie knocks his own net off on a breakaway. Someone scores. Let's say it was me in beer league. No goal. Why? The net's off. Yeah. Well, it was an accident. The goalie knocked it off. So they're benefiting from the goalie knocking his own net off. Minor hockey, everything else. There's so many little tweaks in there that are so good that you need to do, especially for kids. If Craig, you commit an action and get 5 in a game, the ref says, coach someone in the box. Nope. What are you talking about? I'm not putting anybody in the box. Oh, in the NHL, you can do that. If the penalty runs out and there's nobody in the box, you play shorthanded. Happened to Mike Babcock. But in minor hockey, it's perfect because guess what you can do? Not punish a kid for 5 minutes. You think the coach is putting his own kid in the box, Craig, for five? No, the rule's there. And actually, if I remember correctly, you're allowed to substitute the player that you eventually put in the box, which is also brilliant. So Susie goes in, Johnny goes in, Freddie goes in. So no one has to stay in there the whole time. Craig, Carlton Fisk, we talked about it episode 91. Think, does it make sense? And the NHL, by thinking, it doesn't make sense what Keith Tkachuk did, we're changing the rule. It doesn't make sense that you can impede the goalie and allow a goal to count. And I think where we are, I think people just don't know that they don't know. So they say, oh, they're trying to get the Habs or trying to get the Flames or whatever. No, you don't. Now, if you want to change the helmet mask coming off rule, if you want to change that rule or change it, I'm open to any discussion. Best idea wins. Right now, we have the best ideas. I think USA Hockey and Hockey Canada, Craig, honestly, I've been at the rink and they say that's no goal. They're gonna punish someone for doing a spinorama in minor hockey. If the NHL wants to do something, it's one thing. But it's one thing to sit there and say, for the kids, we're going to have this rule. I don't know. I just think people aren't thinking.
Well, this is the way we've always done it, Craig. This is the way my grandfather did it back in Sudbury. And
I think sometimes these things that don't work now should be changed. That's what I say. I love the new NHL rule book. I really do.
I do too, Steve. And I think you make a great point about, you know, how you look at something. Wait a sec, do we need to rewrite this? Do we need to change it? And that's what a lot of the meetings are about. Okay, let's examine some of these things. You know, my pet peeve, and it still remains a pet peeve. And I've heard the arguments and everything. It's nonsensical to me. I have two pet peeves. One is mine. One is Bob Gainey's. Okay, so full disclosure. So mine is, why are you allowed to make a hand pass in the defensive zone? Sorry. I don't care if you break your stick. I don't care if you lose your stick. Like, you're not allowed to make a hand pass anywhere else. Why is a defensive team allowed to make a hand pass? To me, it's nonsensical. Just eliminate the hand pass. That way, you know what? You break your stick, too bad. You don't get to make a play with your glove. You can't do it anywhere else. Bob Gainey's one is, you're not allowed to ice the puck, you know, at any time. You pay a price for that. But now you go and break the rules, and now you're allowed to ice the puck when you're penalty killing. And those are the two that just, like, why? Why would you go and break the rules? You're allowed to go and ice the puck. You're not allowed to ice the puck when you don't break the rules. Anyway, those are my two pet peeves. They still remain on the books. I don't know if they'll ever come off the books, but I think it's important to have pet peeves.
I think it is too. It's like, we won't put you in jail, but you're on parole. So you better be in it by five. And if the original icing rule started, you can't ice the puck ever, we would have grown up for 106 years of NHL hockey, always knowing that you couldn't ice the puck when you're shorthanded. But because of that tweak in there, we've allowed it. We've allowed it. So, and I'll tell you this much, you can bet on this. I don't think the two pet peeves that you're complaining about are going to change, unfortunately, Craig.
Yeah, I am.
Anytime soon. Time now for KB on Ice, an inside look at the NHL, brought to you by our friends at Sports Interaction. Sports Interaction is Canada's sportsbook, 19+. Please play responsibly. Mr. Button?
You know, El Nino comes in from the Pacific into Western United States and Canada, right? And wreaks havoc. That's what the Seattle Kraken are doing now. Washington is going into a storm in Seattle. I got the Kraken at home to beat the Caps. Friday, sorry, Ottawa Senators. Rangers are going to win again. Back-to-back games, Rangers. And Saturday, down in the Sunshine State, Toronto, Tampa Bay. Toronto playing really well. I'm taking the Lightning at home against the Leafs.
That's a great matchup, and that's going to be a great game. I got the Preds on John Hines' return to New Jersey to upset the Devils. Jets steamroll, whether Laine's playing or not, Friday. And the Oilers steamroll Montreal on Saturday. The worst is over for Edmonton. They're moving on up, Wheezy. Moving on up. Sports Interaction is Canada's sportsbook. Log on to sia.com/coolbuttonpod and sign up and deposit today. Canada's sportsbook is Sports Interaction, 19+. Please gamble responsibly. Now, was that Matthew Tkachuk loving?
Those were soft boos. I mean, then the standing ovation. Martin Buron, God love him, he said, Steve, it'll be worse for Tkachuk in Calgary than it was for Eichel in Buffalo. And I said, are you sure, Marty? And he goes, no. That's my how I feel. I said, maybe it'll be worse for Johnny Gaudreau. But what I saw there was kind of a, you know, come on, you know, your buddy, you punch him in the shoulder, you're just wrestling a little. I think Matthew should be very happy with how the fans treated him on his return. And for Calgary, the night couldn't have gone any better, Craig. Couldn't have gone any better.
You're right, though. But, like, Matthew Tkachuk was a terrific player for the Calgary Flames. And Johnny Gaudreau was a terrific player. I think Johnny Gaudreau will get the same treatment. I really do. I mean, what he did, they left. Why don't we rewind just a little bit in time? Wayne Gretzky wanted out of Edmonton. Did they boo him when he came back to Edmonton? No, nor should they have. For all the brilliance that Wayne Gretzky displayed, bottom line is, Wayne was looking at it and he said, hey, listen, you know, this is something that can benefit me. I got to look at what he did is he took a global perspective instead of a provincial perspective. And, you know, Wayne has always been wonderful in terms of being a great ambassador for hockey. Right. Well, for him to end up in LA was awesome. And obviously he had thought about it and people had put the idea into his head, but he left Edmonton. Right. Like, I mean, he said, I'm not going to play here anymore. That's what he said. I mean, Joe Nieuwendyk said, I'm leaving Calgary. Doug Gilmour said, I'm leaving. Matthew Tkachuk, Johnny Gaudreau weren't the first players to leave Calgary. They're not going to be the last. That's where we're at today. Bottom line is, I think that going into it, I was talking to a few people that day that were going to the game, and I said, what do you think? I said, cheer him when the video tribute comes on, because he did a lot of great things for this franchise. And when he touches the puck during the game, boo him. But don't boo him during the video tribute, because you know what? That's what it's all about. But Jack Eichel was very different. There was a lot of friction between Jack Eichel and Buffalo. And I think that's a little bit different scenario. And certainly Marty, who's very close to the Buffalo Sabres, you know, such a proud Buffalo Sabre too. I mean, he probably felt that he was, you know, challenged by Jack Eichel leaving. How dare Jack Eichel do that? I get it though. That's the emotion is a big part of life and a big part of the game.
I also brought up history, whether I'm right or wrong, because, you know, Canada is regional. There's like six regions, right? And the biggest coming back or never having left, but, you know, snubbing, was Eric Lindros. And when he went back to Quebec, it was Eichel-like, and it was they were angry. But I used the example of kind of Canada and the United States with the British background. You know, the Americans more the rebels and forget England, and we're going to form the 13 colonies and Boston Tea Party, and Canada more United Empire loyalists. It's like different. Marty said no. And I said, well, I believe that. And because Quebec's kind of different, they took it more personally that you don't want to be part of our culture. And they were more angrier at Eric than I think anyone in Calgary or Edmonton or Toronto's ever been. And it's like, there's no way what happened with Eichel or Tavares on the island. I don't think would ever happen, let's just say, and it's not a snub, it's just anecdotal in English Canada. We're not like that. We're more, what are you doing? You know, there was a time when you would go to a game, people would wear a suit and tie, you know, who weren't in the corporate world. Honey, we have tickets. We're going to dress up. It's a night and I'm putting on my best derby. It's just different whether it's right or wrong. And people can respectfully disagree with me. It's not as part of the history. We've lived this since, you know, we were born. You were born into hockey. I was born into the Summit Series. And when you go back and look at the history books, and it's not bad. I'm more kind of American and I would be the rebel. I would be the one, Eric, here's your pastor. Like, that would be more my kind of European hothead background. But the Canadian thing, and, you know, Marty disagreed. And I said, okay, but the American, you know, no, we're not justified. We're going to stand up for rights or in Canada. That's okay. That's what I saw. Canada, the boos. Here's Tkachuk. They're touching the puck. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? That's like saying, I'm mad at my girlfriend. Boo. Okay, you've served enough punishment. There were times Tkachuk touched the puck and they didn't do So, and then the cheering, like, they got up. That was a real standing ovation. The Jack thing is way different. The Eric thing is way different. Look, I might be right or wrong. I just, how I feel, Craig. I feel, and it made me, to my history teacher, Mr. Green, I was paying attention. And Canadian history is not as exciting as American history. So I was paying attention in class.
Well, you know, it's interesting because Eric never played for Quebec. He just said, I don't want to play there. But like Sault Ste. Marie also said, I'm not going to play in Sault Ste. Marie. Listen, Sault Ste. Marie and Oshawa played in a playoff series and a final. It was a bloodbath. I'm telling you, it was a bloodbath because, you know, it was Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds versus Oshawa Generals, but it was also Sault Ste. Marie Community versus Eric Lindros. Like you were going to, and I was there. I watched it. I watched it unfold and it was vicious. In terms of, now I'm not talking about physically. I'm talking about the what was hurled on Eric Lindros verbally and everything. I'll tell you a funny story, which I always laugh at, and it tells you about competitors. In 1991, Bob Clark was our general manager in Minnesota, and that was, we'd come off the Stanley Cup final. It was a nice little run. I call it the Magical Mystery Tour because it was magical. It was a mystery how we got there. And nobody should be surprised that Mario and the boys, won the cup. Anyway, Bob Clark was there. But that was the summer when Lindros got drafted. And so Bob Clark was very disappointed. Oh, no, he got players should go where he's drafted. That's not right. And I argued against it. I said, hey, wait a second. Eric Lindros has an opportunity to decide where he's want to go. They're not chattel. And most players have to go where they're drafted. But Eric said, no, I'm not doing it. And I said, we went back and forth. He goes, I just think that it's wrong. And fair enough that, you know, that's where Bob came from. Well, the next year, Bob Clark ends up back in Philadelphia. We're at the draft again. And I'm asked, and they're all in on the Eric Lindros thing. And I go, geez, Bob, I'm really interested to see that the Flyers are hard in on Eric Lindros. I thought he should just go to the team that's drafted. And Bob Clark with his patented, you know, I don't know how much time he spent around, but when he gives you this, Steve, here's my look. He gives you this.
That means you're right. That means Craig, you're right.
He knew, but he said, well, he's available. What are we supposed to do? Not try to go after him, you know? And sometimes perspective comes on it too, right? Like, you know, where you're at. Like that was in the span of one year between, hey, listen, players should go to where he's drafted. Oh no, we got to be in on him. Just depends sometimes on your perspective and where you're sitting.
Yes, that actually ties in nicely to, you know, history and what side of the 49th that you're on. And it also ties into a call, right? Sharks fans said, come on, it's inconclusive, be quiet. Habs fans are like, come on, what's going on? Same as Oiler, Hawk, Winnipeg, Dallas, whatever it is. That's why we need neutrality, which is, I think, something, again, that the Canadians are really good at, neutrality. I think that's all, you know, when we talk about what you're good at and what's very important is to have neutrality, and especially at, you know, the rule book level and the NHL level as well, because at that point we have to sit there and look at something and say, I have to be like, didn't Don Kaharsky get picked by Viktor Tikhonov to, you know, ref 87 Canada Cup games? This is important, you know, about doing, if you're the best in the world, you should be able to do a game involving or not involving, you know, the country of your birth. And I think that type of neutrality is respected by the players. And I think Chris Chelios has had some good things to say about how some of those tournaments were handled. So, but you were going to jump in there, Craig.
Yeah, I just wanted to say something. You talk about Canada, the U.S. Listen, you know, a week ago when I took the position that it was the right call for the Dallas Stars, Winnipeg Jets fans hated me. They weren't neutral. They hated me, right? Like, you know, like you take a position right on certain things and, you know, like, and people go, you hate the Calgary Flames. You're just an Edmonton Oilers lover. Oh, you hate the Edmonton Oilers. You hate. And I've just taken the tack that Ray Ferraro, you know, my real good friend says, no, you just understand. I hate all teams equally. I'm neutral. I hate them all equally. I don't have any favorites, right? Because you can't win. You can't win. You know, last year I was doing a Leafs Flames broadcast and Nikita Zadorov hit, Andre Kasha. It was a clean textbook hit. And okay, I said it. Oh, you would have thought that I was letting Nikita Zadorov off with like the biggest crime ever committed in the history of mankind, the way I was talked about. But So I'm going to disagree with you about neutrality of Canadians. When it comes to hockey and their team, there is no neutrality. There is only the lens that they see through it and with their team.
Yeah, and I followed all that you were going through it, and I was disappointed with all the fan bases. What I meant was at the elite official level.
Oh, okay.
Kaharsky, Fraser, yeah. O'Halloran, and that. But I know what you're saying. Every other fan base, and with the World Cup going on, everyone's delusional. Everyone's a fanatic, equally warped and whacked. So another topic.
Let me finish. I tell the fans all the time, don't stop being passionate. Don't stop. We need that passion. We need that emotion. Don't stop. I'm not telling any fan to stop being that way. I love it. But I understand that, like, I hate your team. I hate every team in the league.
Equally. So it works perfectly. The Arizona plan, is it going to work? I had Javier Gutierrez on the show yesterday. Bruce got him, great stuff. And we had a conversation. Is this a fait accompli? For me, if it was a two-year junior rink, college rink plan, it would be easier to swallow, because when we went to the Calgary Corral and the Cow Palace and all that, you know, if it's 4 years, that's one thing. If it's one is one thing, two is another. Craig, is this going to happen? And is it a bad look if it goes 4 years, because this land is not clean land? They got a lot of work to do there.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Great. So they have work to do. And with any plan, you have to understand, you know, what the objective is in trying to complete it. You have to understand what the obstacles are. So I'm gonna ask you a question. When you were young, you and Diane, you know, started off, right? You started saving, right? Did you have a nest egg when you were 25 to retire on?
No.
But you started, right? And you had a plan and you said, hey, we're gonna save so much and we're gonna invest here, and you did it. And now you get a little bit older, you know, and now you feel like you're reaching a point where, geez, you know, we're comfortable. We can handle some different bumps on the road, so to speak, and we're gonna position ourselves nicely, help our kids with university, whatever it may be. I think for the first time, the Arizona Coyotes under this ownership and this management group are aligned. It always seemed like they were chasing a mirage with their team. They thought they were better. We're going to sign guys and that'll get people in the building. The team was never any good. The building was never something that was settled in the Phoenix area. You know, Jerry Colangelo, who is, you know, the was the big wig in Phoenix with the Suns and everything. You know, there just never was a collaboration. And, you know, the team wasn't good. They didn't have a building, and they built a new building, and that was too far out. I think now they've come to a point, ownership, and obviously ownership is hired management, where, okay, we're going to have a building, we're going to have an area that can be really good, and the team is trying to build so that those two can intersect. I haven't seen that in a lot of years in with this franchise. I think it's there now. So I'm ready to be fully patient. I'm ready to let it unfold and whatnot. And I hear people say it all the time. Oh, they should just listen. You know what? The owner came in and said, I'd like to buy the Arizona Coyotes. So what was Gary Bettman going to do? Say no? Like, you know, somebody's invested a lot of money into this franchise. And Gary has always shown unequivocally that he will exhaust every possibility to keep a team viable in that particular city. And if it doesn't work, then he'll look elsewhere. You know, all you got to look at is Atlanta going to Winnipeg. So I like the plan. I don't know if it's going to be 2 years or 3 years, but I think they're aligned, Steve. And I think that's important. If you're going to ultimately achieve the objective of success in that area, then you have to be aligned in your plan. I see that.
And you could argue that the new group says whatever happened before, that's got nothing to do with us. It's like if I take over the Buffalo Sabres, not my fault they missed the playoffs the last 10 years. I'm starting from scratch. When Jerry Jones took over the Cowboys, they were great in the late 70s, early 80s. And he said, we're going to rebuild. And not my fault what happened before. So the new ownership group is saying, we're going to rebuild, literally. So we're going to tear down the club. We're going to get by. I know in a perfect world, which isn't, it would be 2 years in the junior rink, 4,600 seats. We're going to get the land up. We're going to get the vote and everything else. not my fault, but trust me, we're going to build. And from what I've seen, and I've never been to Arizona, heard great things. You're going to have a rink, a practice rink, condos, golf course, elite shopping, Rodeo. Like, it's a place where if you just lived in this area, it's almost like, hey, maybe we should do the podcast from Arizona, Craig, or the show, because what they're doing is going to be really, really exciting for anyone who's either there or wants to buy a condo there or wants to retire there or wants to live. They're going to make it a destination, if the referendum goes through, from what I understand. Like, it's this is what should have happened in 97. All the Jets have to move, right? It's not our fault what Schenkrow did. The Jets got to move. So we're going to Arizona. What are we going to do? Oh, geez, there's some land over here. We're going to, you know, and this thing would have been done in 2000, and they wouldn't have bounced around from a rink that the basketball owner wanted to screw hockey, and then they wouldn't have gone to Glendale. And people who know the area say, wherever you live, like where I live, it'd be like putting an NHL rink in Whitby. And people were like, I live in Mississauga. I'm not going to Whitby. It has to be. So they never should have built in Glendale. It's like even Ottawa. Get the Sens downtown. Where, Kramer? Downtown. You know, the Patricia Clark song? Yeah, downtown. That's what it's about. So it's going to be important for Ottawa. It's going to be important. So I'm going to be patient. I'm not very patient, but I see this plan. And if the referendum goes through, I see a road to stability and success. I do. And I know there's people, Canadian fans will probably say, they've had 26 years, blah, blah, blah. I get that part. But this is it, Jerry. This is the meal, and they better make it work.
Yeah, and I think, that, like I said, like the plan, the time will tell. You know, we go back to 97. We go back to the Ottawa Senators and the land they had, right? And what we have to do is try to learn from, okay, what led to those decisions, right? And, you know, you talk about, you know, there wasn't a collaboration to build a rink with the basketball team and the hockey team. So you get a hockey team out in Glendale. They built the football stadium right near there for the Cardinals. And so, and same thing in Ottawa, you know, you got somebody coming in and buying the team. They go, wait, we got this plan. This is a great place to build. I get it. Right. But as time passes and you talked about history, and it's a great way to come back to history. What have we learned from history? What can we do? But we can't live in the past. And that's what you're saying. And you just can't do that. And, you know, I got a lot of friends that are in Arizona and a lot of hockey friends that live in Arizona, that love hockey, go to games. And they feel that this is a great spot to put it. You know what I keep hearing? It's the people from the other group running the building that are as opposed to this as anything. Because guess what? They have competition now for concerts and events. And, you know, what are they doing to build up their area? So it's very interesting, you know, when you look at everything that, you know, the owner is trying to do here, you know, like the opposition might be coming from other people. Like, yo, do you want competition? Oh, we don't want competition. Oh, I see. I hear you. So keep everything in perspective here.
Yeah. And that reminds me, I was in Windsor. So the guy that owns the Ambassador Bridge, which was privately funded, and he was smart enough and rich enough. Actually, his dad did it. So he won the gene pool. He was born into the right family. He's against the Gordie Howe Bridge, because the Gordie Howe Bridge is going to put all the truck traffic the other way. So he's against it. So that, be careful where you hear where the negativity is coming from. You know, the person that says, I don't think we should put the steakhouse down the street. Why? Well, I own Ponderosa. Oh, that's what you... So I think it's important to kind of wash away all the white noise, which brings me to my final thought. I'll go first on a final thought. It's the same thing. And you've been here as a manager. As of this moment at 15-5-5 at press time for the Leafs, I got to give Kyle Dubas credit, because Eric Schallgren's played the most games. And when Samsonov and Murray have been in, they've been really good. Like, they've been really good. So I got to say, on the small sample size so far, Ilya Samsonov and Matt Murray, now maybe not so much Samsonov, but Kyle Dubas was ridiculed for bringing in Matt Murray because his history of injuries was an issue. But he also has a history of winning. So what would prevail? Well, so far he's been hurt and he's been good. I don't know what it means for the future, but in this sample size, I got to do say at 15-5-5, Kyle Dubas with Murray and Samsonov, it's working so far when many thought it wouldn't. That's my final thought.
Well, guess what? I'm jumping on your final thought. I like that bandwagon. I want to ride it, you know? And so, you know, Maple Leafs just had their best November in their entire history. They just had their best November. Think about the injuries they went through. So, you know, what they went through. Listen, a lot of decisions, you know, regardless, it comes with risk. And you're trying to evaluate the reward versus the risk. That's what you do in everything in life, right? And so you have a salary cap situation, and Kyle looked at it and said, okay, I know Matt Murray. I think we can. You do the work. Then you go and you get Samsonov, right? And then you say, hey, listen, I think the key thing here, and I said it at the time, I think that Matt Murray would benefit from being in a tandem. I thought that Samsonov at 25 years of age was that's when they just start coming to their own. There was enough evidence that Ilya Samsonov was a good goaltender, right? And now he fell on their lap. And then you believe in Matt Murray. If it was just one or the other, I think there might have been more skepticism. But I think Kyle did a really nice job. Was there risk? Absolutely was there risk. Was there some questions around it? Absolutely there was. But to your point, their goaltending is no longer a question mark. No, and it goes three deep. You got to put Chalgren in there. I keep talking about when they ran into the big problem. They went right into Carolina on a Sunday afternoon, and Chalgren was great. And so he's given them stable goaltending. Listen, Kyle Dubas deserves, again, that's a manager's job. Everybody knows, we heard in the summer, Pierre Dorion won the summer. What a great job. I'm looking at the team and going, not a playoff team. Their defense isn't good enough. Isn't good enough. They're not a playoff team, Steve. You know what? Like, but everybody wants to look at it, and we do that. We assess and everything. There was risk with what Kyle Dubas did, but he also knew there was potential reward. No more questions on the Toronto Maple Leafs goaltending.
People here at Press Time aren't surprised. The Leafs are fourth overall in the NHL. I mean, they didn't know they were going to be banged up on the blue line, and maybe the goaltending issue they thought would be an issue. Whatever. I think what's more impressive as we sign off with the music coming in, they're the third best defensive team in the league. The third best, and they made a conscious effort to improve that, even though they've used three goalies and one of them is Eric Chalgren. So I think it's a neat, interesting tidbit as we go into the weekend and we wrap up episode 98, which is a notch below 99, right? And 99 is where we'll be, and maybe downtown, when we reconvene next week. For Craig Button, Bruce Bolton, I'm Steve Koulias.